Hey, insiders, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to let you all know we had some slight audio issues with an echo during this recording. We've done our best to clean it up, but wanted to make you aware that it's not your device. Also, please keep sharing and subscribing to the free Union Sports app, a social media network that helps parents, players, and coaches engage in a safe, regulated environment. Thanks to all who make the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me, none of the usual suspects you know and love. They are off doing very, very important things for the NWSL and in USL Championship, getting ready for decision day. But that's okay. We kind of got across the pond to the one and only Steven Rodden, founder of Elite Goalkeeper Academy. Steven, it's a cool thing that we were able to connect on United Goalkeeping USA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great platform, isn't it? Lots of positive things happening, which is really good.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So for maybe some people out there who are not kind of familiar with Elite Goalkeeper Academy and what you guys do over in the UK, why don't you kind of give them up to speed?
So it's our 10th birthday today as well. So it's quite a special day. But we've been running for 10 years in the Northeast specifically. So around Newcastle, we do private one-to-one sessions, group sessions. We've worked in grassroots clubs. We've done holiday camps, residential camps. We've done just about everything in the past 10 years. So, yeah, anything you can think of goalkeeping related, we've done it, including keep us going during lockdown as well through home workout videos, lives, everything.
That's amazing, man. And first off, the fact that you're spending your birthday with us here on this show, you would think that there'd be like some sort of big celebration going on out there. I'm assuming earlier on today there was a cake of some sort or some sort of celebration for the academy, right?
Oh, it's all business. All business. no downtime.
Well, you know, I mean, it's really fascinating when you say that, because I think a lot of people also aren't familiar with the fact that outside of just the fact that, you know, you've run this academy too, you're currently involved in a couple things. First off is you're working in a professional club environment. And second of all, you're still going through your licenses yourself. In fact, I think you're going through your UEFA A candidacy right now.
I believe I've got a decision coming tomorrow on whether I get onto that course. That's the plan, to continue to grow, to learn, to develop. Yeah, so
have you found that difficult to do? Have you to balance like the coaching education standpoint with like continuing to work? Because I know, talking, you know, from myself, that I found it very difficult while I was working in a certain environment to be able to continue my coaching education. I don't want to say that they weren't approving of it or, wanted me to continue to do it, but the needs of the club were more important to them than the needs of myself in my own development.
I think in terms of the club that I work in, there's a lot of support there. There's a lot of encouragement to upskill coaches, whether coaches want to go and earn a degree, do masters, learn different aspects of life, basically, you know. So if somebody wanted to go out there and learn some kind of sports psychology, there might be money there. If somebody wanted to better themselves on Microsoft Excel, there's money there, as well as coach education. So I think for me, it's a brilliant environment to be in. It's an environment where they actually want you to grow and they want you to better yourself. With the overall aim of bettering the environment, bettering the academy, bettering the players, and also aiding people around you. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So let's kind of delve into this topic here, because this is a meaty topic here, and this is something that we kind of discussed, you know, off the air in regards to ourselves here, was the simple fact that like kind of balancing grassroots academy with professional club responsibilities. Steven, for maybe some parents who are out there listening and we don't kind of, you know, understand what we're just referring to right here, what is a grassroots academy?
So from my point of view, it's something away from the club. It's something away from the grassroots clubs that the children may play in. But it's specifically there for players who predominantly play in grassroots football, who want to better themselves.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So in regards to that, like when you're talking about bettering themselves, though, like if you can get a little bit more specific about that, like, you know, what are the time to age ranges that you're looking at here? What are the specifics here? Because obviously in a private academy, there's no sort of like application process where you have to be at a certain level in order to get in, right? It's just anybody for general education, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's got to be fully inclusive, you know. I think from my point of view, I'm not just working with goalkeepers when players come in or young people come in. I'm working with children. I'm working with young adults. I could potentially be working with somebody who further down the line wants to be a lawyer. You know, I'm not just working with goalkeepers. So to put an application process in place or to put trials in place, I feel it would be probably morally wrong, because ultimately, grassroots is there for children to have fun. I think it's to engage them in physical activity, but we should also not neglect the other side of things, the psychological side, the social side of things. So we teach things like respect, hard work, effort, good attitudes, how to apply themselves, how to take on feedback, everything, you know. So we're not just developing goalkeepers, we're developing somebody to hopefully succeed later in life in whatever path they decide to take.
Yeah, you know, and I love the fact that you just brought that up, because I don't think a lot of people understand the simple fact is that when we're talking about youth development, it's not just about developing the goalkeeper, it's about developing that person. Like, I love the fact that you just said about somebody who might want to be a lawyer one day. And I have a feeling that you might have a goalkeeper in your academy that, based on the way that they're, you know, kind of presenting their case for their goalkeeping development, that they that would be right for to being a lawyer one day. But, you know, the full-rounded individual, we want them to make them a successful person in life, right? As opposed to just a successful goalkeeper.
Yes, 100%. And I think it's impact that we have on the young people as well. You know, we're seen as role models. We're seen as that person who they can hopefully rely on, who they can talk to, who they can open up to. And hopefully, you know, they might just remember us in 15, 20 years' time, and, you know, they'll remember us in a nice way, and they'll think fondly, and, you know, it's one of them things where, for me, seeing kids succeeding or seeing young people succeeding away from this, away from goalkeeping, it's brilliant, you know.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things about that too is that when you're talking about this environment here where everybody might not necessarily aspire to be a professional, does that become difficult? Because I think that's something that a lot of young coaches have struggled with, is being able to, how do I handle everybody's development differently, because everybody has different goals for their training. So, you know, how do you do this to make sure that people don't feel like they're either it's too slow for them or too fast for them, but they're just in the right group?
I don't think you should really treat them any different, to be honest. One thing I don't really judge a player on, a child on of any age, is ability in a grassroots environment. I'm looking at, as I've said before, how resilient can they be? How can they deal with mistakes? What are the respect levels like? What's the attitude like to other people? What's the attitude like to me? Parents, you know, everything's monitored, and we'll just try and guide them. You feel like you can probably push people in the right ways. Whether that's, can I push them more technically? Can I push them more psychologically? Physically, can I get a little bit more out of them? Can I get them to open up in a social environment, you know? So for me, it's not, how can I really push on that person who might be striving? It's everybody gets the same level of care in the correct way. It's more about knowing the individual, you know?
Yeah, Well, I want to throw this up here right now. And my gosh, I mean, you know, it's funny, man, because when people come on the show, they've just got these high level presentations that they just have ready to go. It's almost as if you do this for a living consistently over and over and over again. But I think a lot of people, before we kind of get into this presentation right here, Stephen, don't understand the fact that, like, you're also working another job while you're doing this. So how do you balance the time, and how do you make sure that one doesn't suffer from the other?
I was thinking about this question a lot, and I've had discussions over the years, and I've had thoughts and feelings myself. And I've also been in this scenario where I presume a lot of people are, where you feel like you're doing too much to stay busy. You're doing too much to try and make ends meet. Because as a goalkeeper coach, especially self-employed, we can't be working regular hours. We're in a smaller window where we've got to fit around school, we've got to fit around games, training, everything. So people feel like they need to cram so much into so little time. And another thing to kind of consider is to stay fresh and to stay motivated. So it's the way I balance it is by not doing too much. I got to a point where I was traveling miles in between sessions, and you're thinking, well, why am I doing it? What, obviously for the goalkeepers, it's great, but you've also got to remember yourself. You've got to consider yourself, and you've got to do what enriches you and what motivates you. Because you can go to some places, and it's sometimes you think, why do I want to do this, or why am I doing this? And it can't just be about money, you know.
Of course,
you've got to think about obviously developing the players, but at the same time, I don't want to be going somewhere where I'm not motivated. I want to give everybody my 100% all the time. So to juggle it, it's to not do too much. I had a conversation with a friend who's kind of fallen out of love with football a little bit, and he's kind of segued into another career, still in sport but not in coaching. And I had the conversation like, do you think it's because you were doing things that didn't really motivate you, that you weren't really passionate about, were in environments that didn't help you grow? So I think it's finding that balance.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the tough things with the balance thing is that a lot of people out there become passionate about one thing for a certain amount of time, and then they kind of lose that passion, and it starts becoming repetition, just kind of this the mundanity of it, which I don't know if that's a word, but I'm going to use it anyway. But just kind of like, you know, you're kind of going through the motions, and yeah, and you start recognizing, you're like, oh, what happened that I lost that joy or that passion for this? And do I need to take some steps back in order to find that, you know? And I think personally, Stephen, I don't know how you feel about it, but when you start running an academy and you start recognizing that you're just doing this now because you need to in order for your financial stability, that's probably the time for you to stop running the academy and either hand it off to somebody else, you know, or find what it is in the academy is going to bring that passion back for you.
Yeah. I think at the time as well, I was getting to that stage, and the dreaded COVID hit and everything went into lockdown, and you start to reconnect. As I say, during COVID, I was doing videos. So there's a massive catalogue of solo goalkeeping practices on my YouTube channel. There's presentations, there's tutorials. I kind of reconnected with what I loved. I reconnected with my family, my young son at the time. He was being 4 or 5 when went into lockdown.
He's an aspiring goalkeeper himself, is he not?
He's an aspiring footballer at the minute. He does his goalkeeping sessions. He does his football training. I'm kind of at this moment in time. He isn't pigeonholed into one position. Let's be a footballer and let's find our position. You know, he's doing really well as a goalkeeper. He's doing really well, but he's excelling just as well outfield. So, yeah, I'm just enjoying the journey.
You know, it's funny that you said that because I think that's another thing too that I'm seeing a lot of times when it comes to kids joining, you know, private academies and those sorts of things, is that a lot of times it's the parents are saying, well, if you're going into this environment, then this is what you're going to be doing. Like, you know, you're putting all your time and effort into this. But then they go, no, but I want to score goals. I want to learn how to play midfield. I want to do all these sorts of things. And they go, yeah, but we're investing all our time and money into you being a goalkeeper because that's what you said you wanted to do. You know, how is that a struggle that you found as well too? And having those conversations with parents to understand, like, this is an enrichment program, but I don't want you to think that it's an all-in program.
100%. So the first conversations I have, especially with parents of young goalkeepers, I'm talking 6-year-old, 7, 8, 9. Don't pigeonhole them. I've just said there one. This can be an additional practice. It can be to upskill the player, but I don't want you to put all your eggs in one basket and go, right, my child is now a goalkeeper. Because what I've found especially is you get children, yeah, they go from 6 through to 8 or 9 as a goalkeeper. Coaches go, brilliant, we've got a goalkeeper. There you go, you're in goal. They have absolutely zero development of foot skills. They have zero experience and exposure on playing outfield. Then hit 9 and 10, 11-year-old, and they go, actually, you know what? Now I want to be an outfielder. I want to score goals. I want to do this. I want to do that. And then all of a sudden, they turn around to the team coach, and the team coach goes, well, look, you're a good goalkeeper, but you're not up to the standard of the outfield players. We can't keep you in this team. So straight away, that child's lost a friendship group, they've lost a team, they've lost a support network, and they need to start all over again with practically zero skills to go into that next stage of their journeying, you know.
Yeah. And that's a difficult thing too, right there, because, you know, a lot of times, especially at the younger ages, players can get away with just being good athletes. And if you're a good athlete, you can play all the positions, but you haven't really been putting the time into the other positions. And now you're getting to 13, 14, 15 years of age, and you were able to score goals because you know you were just stronger, bigger, faster than all the other kids. But now they know the tactical side in regards to where to make the runs, you know, where to receive the ball and all those things. And now you're behind the eight ball because you spent all this time. And I see this happen, you know, when players come back from a private academy back into their club environment, Stephen, where the outfield coaches are just like, great, that's our goalkeeper. So they're just whenever we need them for something with goalkeeping related, we throw them in. Otherwise, they're in isolation training with the goalkeeper coach. And then they're so far behind, especially in this country, in the United States. And I know you spent some time here as well too, and you saw this in our youth environment where you get these goalkeepers who literally don't understand how to play football because they've only been training in isolation with their goalkeeper coach. And then college ID camps come. You know, obviously university here is a big deal. And they know how to, you know, go through cones and handle a ball, but they have no idea how to read a through ball or handle a cross.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing I've been big on as well is trying to educate grassroots coaches on how to incorporate the goalkeepers into practices, whether it's even just popping them in an end zone and allowing them to play with the ball at the feet, whether they're in small-sided games that are conditioned to bring out certain aspects of the game, whether it's playing out under pressure, whether it's 1v1s, shot stopping. I think probably around the world, probably we've got to do more to make the goalkeeper feel a part of the team and to also incorporate them as a team player, as the 11th player, where they've probably been neglected in the past.
Now, I want to say this right now in regards to that. I want to pull up your development thing, and let's see if we can pop this up here. Okay, so why don't you kind of walk us through what we got going on here? First off, this is your kind of your goalkeeping philosophy, right?
Yeah. So in terms of the intelligent, it's about reading scenarios, whether in possession, out of possession, during transitions, loss of possession, regain of possession. Does a goalkeeper know how to react and the correct actions to use during those phases? Proactive is what is. They've got to be able to read it. They've got to be able to prepare early for a potential problem. The athletic side of things, I like goalkeepers to be able to move. I like them to be able to do those 7, 8, 9 yard sprints to come and sweep up in behind the defenders. I like them to be able to get out and deal with 1v1s, deal with through balls. I like them to be athletic in terms of the jump ability, you know? So
yeah,
there's a lot to it. Technically, I think you have to be sound. You need to have a good technical base. And I think that's a big one for me, because I think now in this country, and I presume beyond as well, there's a bit of a fad, actually. I think it's something that's going to blow over. Let the goalkeeper find their own way. Now, to a degree, that's fine. Put them into practices. Let them explore. But can we have a framework, a technical framework that they can relate to, where they can then interpret that technique physically in the way that they see fit? And if we feel like they're struggling in any way, can we give them hints, tips, guides? And then eventually, can we actually go in and show? But I think in terms of technique, everybody's going to have their own little ways, their own little nuances. And they're going to, you know, everybody's going to move differently. But can we have the same end outcome? Can it be tidy?
So I have a question here in regards to like your goalkeeping model right here that you have here. And when we're talking about your private academy structure, I'm assuming first off that the color coding is in order of importance in regards to the goalkeeping model, correct?
No, this is actually, if you look at the English FA, their four corner model, mm-hmm. This just relates to, it's just consistent with their four corner model.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I think if you look at it, if I was to look at anything, the most important thing for goalkeepers is psychological.
Yeah.
I think psychologically, you need to be quite tough. You need to be thick-skinned as a goalkeeper. So I think you can be the best technician. You can read the game the best. But if psychologically you're not quite prepared, should we say, then the rest really does suffer.
Well, I will say this right here. I love the fact that that included in obviously the FA, you know, and shout out to people like Tim Dittmer, you know, for putting together wonderful curriculums over at the FA. Make sure you guys check out all the work at the FA Boot Room. They do some really, really, really cool stuff over there. But the social component, especially when we're talking about the youth level, I think is so massive. And I think one thing, because the question that was brought up was, okay, well, my child is in a professional club environment. Why would they need to get involved in a private academy outside of their club environment? And I say for the social aspect of being around other goalkeepers outside of their club with no stakes involved. And by no stakes involved, I mean as in the only stakes that are there are their own personal development.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a sensitive subject. Maybe it's a little bit contentious, but I've got a few opinions on kind of when children should be purely dedicated to a professional academy, and kind of how that should be done. So I do feel kind of like once you leave grassroots, it's very hard to get back in. Or if you are released by a professional academy. And sometimes that's not necessarily down to the player or their ability. It could be a psychological thing. kind of like dealing with that rejection, not necessarily having a big safety net underneath them if the inevitable does happen. So, I mean, it's also hard to say that a professional academy goalkeeper should be going into a grassroots academy session, because then you've got a bit of a conflict in information. You look at how much a child's training. So it can, you know, that it can spring up other problems there as well.
Now, one thing I've seen, Stephen, and I don't know if this is an issue, you know, over in the UK, but here, at least in the United States, is a lot of times is there's a huge discrepancy in regards to the training that's available at different professional club academies. Just because someone's at a professional club doesn't necessarily mean that what they're getting is quote unquote better than what they could be getting in a private environment locally in their area. Because a lot of times it's based on the instructor. And as we all know, a lot of times people that are instructors in different programs are there for different reasons. You know, it could be a political reason. It could be, you know, a former player from the club. And I'm not saying that because you're a former player or a political reason that you can't be a good coach. It's just that every environment is different. So is this something that you think you kind of need to look and see, like, well, what are you getting out of this? And what are you not getting out of this before you explore, you know, finding something outside of the club?
It's quite a difficult one, you know. I think in general, from what I've seen, the standard of coaching in the professional environment is generally of a high standard. I do agree as well, obviously, outside of professional clubs, you do have some really, really good coaches. But with, as I say, we've just got to be conscious of that conflict and information. But we've also got to make sure that, obviously, the player's getting the very best, you know. But it could also come through, how does a player take on information? Do they connect with the coach? It might not necessarily be the sessions, but it could be the connection. It could be the relationship that they build up, which, again, it goes back to the social side. It goes back to treating these players as young adults and not as players in professional environments or players in grassroots environments. You know, we need to push, we need to prod, we need to challenge, just to make sure that we're developing the all-round person as well as the player.
Well, I think, you know, look, here's the bottom line here. And obviously, you know, yourself, you know, being in the UK, you know, you're talking about clubs that have had, you know, hundreds of years of history as professional football clubs. Here in the United States, our professional club environment is very young. We're talking about 25, 30 years at the most. And most professional clubs didn't even start academies until probably about 10, 15 years ago. So a lot of the times, and you know this because you spent time here, the amateur clubs in the area may have better resources than the professional clubs in regards to, you know, what they have available from an educational standpoint.
Yeah. I suppose it goes back to what I said earlier as well. It's about investing in people. Are these clubs making it an attractive enough proposition to want to be coaching at a certain standard, or mm-hmm. are we happy allowing really, really good coaches to coach at a lower standard and let those players filter through when they're deemed good enough, you know? It could be a culture thing as well, you know. Obviously, in America, football is what's the fourth largest sport in the country.
Yeah, but it's the fastest growing, and it's the most popular participation sport in the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, probably what you'll find is not many people are, and you've just said it there, it's a participation sport. People are doing it because they enjoy it. But where, in terms of American football, baseball, basketball, ice hockey, where are people or where our parents and players really kind of like dedicating their time and dedicating their resources.
That's a great point.
In this country, you've got our biggest sport is football. The biggest money earner is football. The biggest participation sport is football. It's massive across the board. You know, whereas in the US you've got a variety of sports there, even track and field, athletics, in terms of sports scholarships as well, going into universities, you'll have a lot of people going into universities as brilliant basketballers, getting scholarships, American footballers, athletes, and kind of like what resources are filtered down into football over there, soccer.
Those are all great points that you brought up right there. And it makes me want to go kind of to right here when you're talking about, okay, well, there's all this going on. So how the heck do I build a successful academy? And I think it really all starts with your syllabus here. You know, one thing that I've seen with a lot of times with private academies is that a lot of people either try to mimic what they're doing at the club environment that they're in right there or one that they've been in before, not recognizing this is a different animal. Well, just kind of walk us through your syllabus right here and why you think this is important when you're putting your academy together.
I think in terms of this, it gives the goalkeeper a rounded view of the game. You know, they get to see everything that they would do come a Saturday or a Sunday or even in training when they go back to the team. So going back to the philosophy of creating intelligent goalkeepers, we're giving them scenarios, we're giving them solutions. Now, can you go and apply that thinking to each scenario that you see? It's just giving that rounded view. It's making sure that we're setting this young player up for success, ultimately.
Yeah, and now, like when you were looking at that right there, so obviously, if we go back to right here, when you're talking about your in possession, out of possession, and during transitions. Now, one thing I've found a lot of times, at least at private academies here, and I apologize that I'm using the United States as an example so much, but that's where I'm based right now, so it's what I'm around the most, is that there's so much focus on the out of possession element in the academy, in the private academy environment. A lot of times because they're dealing with a lot of foundational goalkeepers who are new to the position and their parents are there because their coach said they need to learn how to catch, to dive, to move their feet, that sort of a thing. And then you come in there and you go, okay, well, let's work on in possession or transitional work. And then they come back and their parents like, that's not what we paid for. We paid for blah, 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 because they can't catch a ball. You know, and you're talking about 9, 10, 11 years old, man. And so they don't understand the context of it.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head there to parents. So how are we, in terms of how do we set sessions up? Are we setting sessions up to please the parents or are we setting the sessions up to develop goalkeepers? And for me, you've got to have a buy-in with that, you know. There's accountability there. So for me, I've got all this literature. Parents want to see it. There you go. You know, there's my accountability now. This is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. It's not just a case of, right, I'm going to get your child to stand in the middle of the goal. They're going to jump over a couple of hurdles and they're going to make a top corner save because it looks great. And then I'm going to scream and I'm shout there's a great save. I'm not there to do that. I'm not there. You see a lot of sessions. I've seen them before. Run through a load of cones, through some ladders, a couple of burning hoops. And at the end, there you go. There's a fantastic save. And go and stand in line for 5 minutes. And we'll let the other 20 kids go through while I throw one ball every 30 seconds. You know, it's not goalkeeping, is it? It's not goalkeeping.
No, and I love what you just brought up right there because, you know, for anybody out there, any parents that are watching right now and they're putting their recruiting tapes together with their young goalkeepers, you know, for university or the lower level professional level or whatever, I can't tell you how many times when I've been coaching at that level, the first 5 minutes is just showing me that the goalkeeper is very fit. That's great. It's just all the final action. And I have no idea what the scenario was whatsoever. I have no idea how this has to come into play with the actual game. And I'm not saying that everything has to be game realistic, because I think that's a problem too, Steven. I think a lot of people just need to know context. Yeah. Okay, why are you going through these cones and moving into this angle right here? Well, yes, there's no cones on the field. I understand there's no mannequins on the field. What are we simulating here, or what are we trying to develop to get ready for that game realism?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of myself, I try and limit how much equipment is actually on the pitch at any given time. I don't like too much clutter. I like things to be nice and clean. I like to see the ball moving or the goalkeeper moving in realistic ways, with realistic outcomes. But as you say, it doesn't all have to be, there's a ball, there's a couple of goals, there's a lot of chaos, and then it just ends up messy. It ends up messy in terms of the session. It ends up messy in terms of decision-making, techniques used, techniques executed. And it just becomes a bit of an emergency session. It's like, right, I'm not going to get my body in the correct position. I'm not going to get my hands in the right place. I'm not going to set. It's just, I'll throw an arm at it. I'll throw a leg at it. And it just, it doesn't help. It doesn't help the goalkeepers.
And I will say this, that, you know, in regards to like the, when we were talking about the grassroots environment, you know, one thing that I've found, and this was somebody that taught me this years back, is that you have to understand that in a grassroots environment that the GKIQ is not going to be at the same level as in your club environment. So the best way to do that is to start teaching them the game by gamifying your activities. The only way you're going to get game realism is to gamify it so that they don't even recognize that they're playing the game and learning scenarios in the game, because otherwise it's just going to be a lot of standing around and a lot of people moving through cones, and it's going to get very repetitive, because they're not in that environment day in and day out where they're being challenged from an IQ standpoint, from a tactical standpoint. And I've seen this when you throw a club kid into a grassroots environment, and it's like they're playing a different sport, and it's not fair to that kid, because the other kids are so far behind. Is that something you found as well too?
In terms of goalkeeping, I think you see goalkeepers who come out of academies who are constantly being looked at by other academies, and I think, but then on the flip side, you do see some exceptional grassroots goalkeepers who maybe haven't had that opportunity at a professional club as well. And sometimes you do wonder why, you know. But yeah, I think on the whole, in terms of the game IQ, I think that does carry certain players through. You know, it does, being in the right place at the right time, the correct action at the right time. But I think there's a bit of a flip side to that as well, you know.
Yeah, I love what you just did right here in regards to your syllabus right here, in regards to the types of sessions. I think a lot of young coaches out there need to see this, because again, one of the problems I've seen, Steven, especially with social media, a lot of things being out of context, and this happened during the pandemic, is a lot of young coaches went, oh, well, I just watched this session that, you know, the FA just did, you know, at St. George's Park, and I think this would be wonderful for me to do with my 11s right now.
Yeah.
And they don't know match day minus what. When was that? What was the level of the goalkeepers? What happened before? What was the purpose? All those sorts of things. The fact that now you're showcasing here the type of session and the frequency based on the age and development level, I think is amazing. I think everyone should take a screenshot of this right here.
Yeah, I think you're right as well. You've kind of hit the nail on the head there. Context is key. You know, you can go and watch sessions, great. You know, go and steal things. The greatest coaches always steal. But know what you're doing and know why you're doing it. It's not just a case of I've seen this session, I'm going to put it on, and it might look great, but what have the goalkeepers learned? What have I coached? Why have I coached it? What phase of the game is it, you know? They have to see those pictures if it's isolated pictures. So if I'm dealing with crosses, you know, might be a touch, high cross, come and claim. You know, I'm showing them that specific picture. I'm giving them that specific detail. It's not going to be right. It's going to be a touch. It might be pulled back to the edge of the box. It might be switched out the other side. It might come back in. It might be a shot. It's right. We're working on crossing. This is what you're going to see. If you punch it, you might get a second phase. You might get a shot from the edge of the box. You might get a shot through bodies. You might get a deflection, you know. But it's got to all relate to your topic.
I love the fact that you just brought that up, because that's something that I've been trying to incorporate more and more in my sessions with throughout the years, is that the reward of certain actions leads to another action because of what you did, whether it's positive or negative reward. So let's say it's in possession. Well, because the fact of that was that clean handle right there, your reward is that outside flank player is now open and you can play that ball into space to them for the counter. So now you're getting involved in that. And I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to see that. I love the fact that here with the, and when we're talking grassroots here, the isolated technical practice, U7 to U11, how you say that is a high, high necessity right there. Again, I've seen it so many times at this age group that people think, well, they need to learn the game, so let me just roll out a bunch of balls and have them scrimmage. It's got to be flip-flopped.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think especially in terms of goalkeeping, because it's a complex position. You know, there's a lot of complex actions. I want to make sure that my goalkeepers are doing things efficiently, they're doing things effectively, and they're doing things safely. You know, I don't want a young goalkeeper diving, landing on the arm and breaking the arm. You know, it's I want to make sure that goalkeepers are doing it safely first of all, and then they're utilising their physical makeup to move effectively. You know, and to be efficient with it as well, to not waste time. So, yeah, it's I think it's got to be that way. It has to be. With outfielders, I think you can go 50-50. They will learn by playing the game, but they'll learn by playing conditioned games. They'll learn by doing unopposed practices. They'll learn by doing opposed practices, you know. So with outfielders, it does look different to goalkeeping.
Well, you know, one thing that that Nathan Thackeray over at NC Courage brought up to me when he was working with the youth program over there a few years back was recognizing the demands of the age group that you're working with. So what is their game? What is the game that they're seeing? What are the pictures they are actually seeing? And if you're painting pictures for a senior level with a 7 or 8 year old, that's not actually game realistic, because that's not the pictures they're seeing.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you can see here, in terms of under 7, under 11, I might actually change that to, and rephrase that to say under 10, because the game is a lot smaller. It's 5v5, 7v7 in this country. It's played on a smaller pitch with smaller goals. So they've seen a lot of shots. They've seen a few 1v1s. In terms of what I've got there, dealing with crosses, the crosses would mainly be low, starting as they get older, starting to get a little bit higher. It might be a case that they need to punch, you know. So it's, in terms of crossing and punching, that's preparation for the next phase, the under 11s to the under 13s phase, where they're going to start to see more crosses. So if we can get into them some fundamental movement skills, dealing with crosses, then they're going to be all the better for it the older they get. Obviously on this one here, I'd say probably under 11s plus, yeah. Under 11s to under 16s. The red ones are just things that we'll be looking to add.
Yeah, so I'm looking here, and one of the things that I love that you're saying right there is in the yellow for the physical of the dominating the duels, because I start finding that this age group, this is when the physicality starts really coming into play. Because you're talking about now, at the foundational ages, most of the kids are pretty much around the same level physically. Here you got one kid who's got a full beard, and he's 6 foot. And you got another kid who's 5'5", you know, and still looks like he's 8 years old.
Yeah.
Well, how's that 5'5 kid going to be able to physically win a duel with that other kid? Well, it's by understanding the game. It's by the tactics and not just physically overpowering someone. So I love the fact that you're bringing up this, because I think that also brings up a little bit of the bravery scenarios. Like, hey, if I was facing Romelu Lukaku and I'm a smaller goalkeeper, you know, I'm going to have to be brave in that scenario. I'm going to have to be able to handle it the same way that I do, you know, a smaller guy coming at me, you know, Mo Salah. So, you know, you can't pick and choose when you're physical and when you're not physical.
Yeah. So I think there with dominating the duels, I think regardless of size, two things that I always try and incorporate and instill in the goalkeepers, especially in duels. So you could be talking about 1v1s, you could be talking about high crosses, is you've got to be positive. So you've got to go in with a positive mindset, positive outcome. You've got to be aggressive. And I always like to expand on the aggressive side. It's not, I'm not going in to hurt somebody. But at the same time, what I get them to visualise is being a boxer. Boxers don't go in there and touch each other. Boxers go in there and when they're fighting, they're explosive. Powerful, and you've got to try and get that into them. You've got to get into them that 1v1s, high crosses, the need to explode through the ball.
Yeah, you know, and go ahead.
So yeah, so kind of like regardless of size, having that mentality.
Let's move in here. Now we're talking about the young professional level, you know, or yeah, getting ready for university if you're talking about here in the United States. But in my opinion, you know, Stephen, when we're talking about university here in the United States, we really are talking about young professional, because you're getting into a young adult environment where it's not as much focus on development. There's still development going on, but it's about showcasing that you have the capabilities to play at that next level for a longer period of time. And you're showcasing and stressing in this area that it's really all about game scenarios with a little bit of emphasis on the technical and tactical.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's obviously still a lot of development to do psychologically. Still a lot of development to do socially in terms of leadership skills, in terms of being a positive influence on the group, being respectful, being a good teammate. Psychologically, mistake management, you could get, especially at kind of like professional level, you've got to be able to deal with pressure when you start getting crowds coming to watch you. But mainly it's how effective can I be in my game? You know, how effective can I distribute the ball? How effectively can I keep the ball out the back of the net? How effectively can I deal with crosses, 1v1s? You know, that's what you really start to look for, you know?
So I have a question for you in regards to like your academy structure. And let's say, you know, you have, you know, your foundational work, and then you've got all the way up to your young professionals, you know, working in the academy environment. When you're talking about the technical with the youngers, do you, I don't want to say reprimand, but you're more critical of the technique, and at the olders, you're more focused on the effective action?
I think you've still got to be, no, I think like I touched on before, we've got to allow these goalkeepers to explore, you know, in terms of their physical makeup, you know. They've got to be allowed to go in and do things in the way that they the way that they interpret information, you know. So if I'm telling you to catch, say, in the W there, I'm not saying, right, I want your only thing I want to see is head still, hands coming straight up behind the ball. Somebody's elbows could be more flared, somebody's elbows could be tighter, somebody might catch close at the face, somebody might catch further away. You know, so although I might do things that way, somebody else might do things slightly different, put their own slight physical interpretation on it. And as long as they're effective with it, that's fine. As I say, you will have a technical framework for a goalkeeper to work to, you know, but it's not necessarily, it's not rigid. It's not, the elbows need to be on this angle, the thumbs need to be this far apart, the elbows need to be this wide. It's, you know, it's let's develop the goalkeeper to be an individual, but let's develop them to be effective and efficient in those actions.
Yeah, I love what you just said right there, because I think one of the biggest problems, at least that young coaches have, and I definitely was a culprit of this too, is that I would especially be teaching younger goalkeepers to do things the way that I would based on my own physicalities, as opposed to what works for them and their structure. And like you said, if you have a goalkeeper, and I had this example, I had this goalkeeper who had ridiculous wingspan, just long Courtois type wingspan. And because of that, it's very difficult for them to handle clean with elbows lined up in that L shape type of thing to handle a ball like that. Their arms are so long, it's very difficult for them to do that. And I would keep getting on them about their shape when they were catching the ball. But it was being effective based on what they were doing. So it was very frustrating for them when I was a younger coach to be like, well, I'm doing what you want me to do, but you're still asking me to do it differently. I don't understand. And I think, you know, you hit a huge thing on the head in regards that children take things literally. So if you say, I want you to do it like this, and they're not doing it like that, they start getting frustrated.
Yeah, because physically the car physically they aren't capable. You know, talking about Courtois, if you look at the way that Courtois sets, he's going to set differently to shorter goalkeeper. Let's say somebody like a Navas, Keylor Navas. He's going to set completely differently. He's got longer legs, he's got longer arms, he's about 6 inches taller. You know, so his demands there, what in terms of what does he need to do? Navas, well, Navas is shorter, he probably needs to set a bit taller. Whereas Courtois taller, so he probably needs to set a little bit lower, which, you
Yeah.
know, it benefits their physical makeup. If Courtois is setting lower, it means he can get low quick. If Navas is setting a little bit higher, it doesn't impact on his ability to get down, but might allow him to get up or to move his feet a little bit quicker or a little bit more effectively.
You know, and one thing that has been brought up to me, you know, within the last few years in regards to the manipulate is that the goalkeeper a lot of times is also in control of manipulating their environment too. And based on how they set, where they set, a higher, lower is going to encourage players to play, you know, into their strengths a lot of times. They go, oh, well, this keeper's nice, deep and low. Okay, well, they can be shooting high. Well, they don't realize that this goalkeeper is very explosive. That's why they can set so low like that. You know, another goalkeeper's really high, you know, they're like, oh, I got to shoot the ball. I can shoot the ball low on them because they stay up high. Well, they don't realize how long their reach is, and they're baiting you, and they can go drop into a split and make that save right there. So, you know, these are the types of things I think a lot of young coaches have to take into effect. And when you talk about exploring, it's like finding out what works for you, man. Finding out what works for you. I want to talk a little bit about these non-negotiables because I really love this right here with your session. And I think when you're talking about setting up your structure for your academy or just working even in a club, I think these are monumental to have.
Yeah, no, definitely. Again, going back to building the person, developing the person. You know, you look at these, you replace the word session with school, you replace it with work, you know, family life, anything, you know. you replace that first word with anything that's important, then you're going to be on the right path. If you're putting in effort, if you're respectful, if you take accountability, if you've got the correct attitude, if you encourage others, and if you build other people up, brilliant. And if you can take constructive feedback in the right way, they're all things that are going to set you up at some point down the line, hopefully to succeed.
Yeah. And, another thing that, in regards to like what you're saying with those those non-negotiables right there, you'd saying, these are the life skills that you're going to have to make the better person. I want to go back to this one right here, encouragement, because I think that right there can teach you very quickly who there has the mental mindset to be a leader on the pitch and be able to take control of a situation and not be arrogant, but more be there to make sure that they get the best out of others. I think a lot of people out there, and I see this in session designs all the time in regards to the behaviors of the coaches, are teaching their goalkeepers to be loud and boisterous, but they're not giving the why on why they want that communication this way.
Yeah.
Hey, I've heard this so many times. You need to be louder. You need to be louder. Why do you need to be louder? What is the reason? Are you being so now you just have goalkeepers out there just shouting at people.
Yeah.
And that's not how you get the best out of people.
Yeah, it's just noise, isn't it? Again, I've in terms of YouTube, I think I spent about an hour discussing goalkeeper communication during lockdown with about 25 to 30 young goalkeepers, which was very, very constructive. I think as well as that, we need to, in terms of the psychological side, we need to teach confidence, but make sure that it doesn't overstep the line into carrying a really big ego, because there's a very, very fine line between somebody who's confident and somebody who's egotistical. And that's self-awareness. It could be how humble a person is. It could be, how they view themselves. So,
Stephen, I know it's late. I mean, it's obviously the birthday for the academy, and you had your own coaching with the club, earlier on today, and it's getting close to 10 o'clock for you right here. But do you have time for a couple more questions? Are you cool with that?
100%. Yeah. I'm happy to keep going.
Awesome.
I can speak all night.
So I want to get a little bit more back into the nuts and bolts of an academy structure. For a private academy for younger coaches out there and a lot of coaches out there, I'll be honest with you, here, at least in the United States, they supplement their income working in a club environment by doing their own private work in the local area. What should be kind of like the emphasis for that person in regards to balancing those two, like, should they make sure that their private academies are on off days? Is it possible to do it on the same days? Like, what is your recommendation?
It's a hard one. I suppose it's situation dependent. I couldn't run my own private academy on the same night that I work at the club because of times. But then again, it goes back to what I said before. You've got to do it because you love it. You've got to do it because it motivates you. There's no point in going, right, well, I'm working at the club three evenings a week, and one day on a weekend. So now I'm going to cram the other 3 days with coaching because I have to, because I've got time. It's what motivates you, what you love doing, what enriches you, what, where do you get your, where do you get the most benefit from it, So kind of in terms of coaching, do what you think's best for you. But like you touched on before, don't let money rule your decisions.
Yeah.
You've still got to have a good quality of life outside
What are your thoughts on like one-off sessions for goalkeepers? That's something that's very popular here in the United States is, coaches, team coaches, outfield coaches encourage young goalkeepers to find a private trainer to work with them in a one-on-one environment?
It's this a little bit conflicted because, yes, I do one-on-one sessions, but I don't feel a goalkeeper gets the most benefit from a one-on-one session. You've obviously still got to cater to demand, but at the same time, I'm completely open and honest, as I am about specialising in positions. I don't believe that one-on-one sessions are as beneficial as what a group session could be, purely because you don't get that realism from it. So, yeah, if I was to advise young goalkeepers and parents, it would be find a group session, find a good group session with a reasonable number of children in it, a good coach-to-kid ratio, a good coach-to-goalkeeper ratio. And
What do you recommend for that?
Personally, I'm comfortable working anywhere up to 10. So 1 to 10, I split the groups off into two groups, and they can work simultaneously. And they can even interlink as well. And then, obviously, when you're going to like your small-sided condition games, it all links well. But it depends on the coach, you know, how can you, so over time I've learned how to manage sessions. You know, when you're younger, when you're first starting out, it's maybe a little bit harder. It's maybe a little bit overwhelming having a lot of kids and a lot of things going on, that you feel the need to line kids up and I'm going to serve for you. But then the goalkeepers don't get the returns of the distribution through the service, you know. So as much as you might be working on an out possession shot stopping session, if I can get the goalkeeper serving, actually there you go, there's some distribution for you.
Yeah.
Now you learn to strike the ball in different ways, and you know sessions flow. That's where you find leaders. You come on, stop messing on. Right, let's switch. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then you also get those that start to help each other as well and to guide and encourage. So again, the returns of that are massive.
Yeah. And finally, Stephen, just in regards to this, from a structure, from a standpoint of organization, with your academy, what's the best route to go for finding staff? Like, is there a conflict of interest of having staff that works with you in your club environment as well too, or does it not really matter? Like, what's your best advice on that?
coming from the person who's probably had the most bad luck recruiting people, I think first of all you've got to find people that you trust. Trust has to be a massive thing. Don't just get somebody in because it's another way or means to make you money. You've got to get people in that buy into your vision. You've got to get people that aren't going to be working against you behind your back. I think for me, it's developing coaches. So I've got a couple of people who I can rely on if I'm not available, who I've actually coached for years. And I go, I need a session covering. Can you come in and do it? And because I've coached them, they know my methods, they know how I coach, they know my manner. And they're able to step in quite seamlessly.
Yeah. And I think that's really important that you say that in regards to that they can. I find myself personally is that if somebody can't go in there, and I'm not saying be me, because I don't want coaches that are going to be me, because then they're not bringing their own personality and being true to their authenticity and who they are. The reason bring in different coaches to have different voices. But if they can't come in and the goalkeeper can get the same value for being in that session, then it's, first off, the parents are going to be disappointed. They're going to be upset. They're like, well, we paid X amount and we thought we were getting blah, 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 but this is what that person delivered. So, you know, I think you're right in regards to, and that's the toughest thing, at least for me, is finding people that share that, I'm trying to think of like the best way to put it in the words. It's like, the same methodology.
Yeah.
And really believe in that methodology as opposed to just saying that because they want to work at your academy.
Yeah.
You know, so we can kind of leave it at there. Well, Steve, man, thanks for taking the time, man. I really appreciate you, you know, taking all this time. Obviously, if people want to connect with you, it looks like these are probably the best ways to do so right here, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Nice. So the Facebook, Elite Goalkeeper Academy, website, Elite Goalkeeper GK. Oh, EliteGKAcademy.com,
yeah.
Insta, Twitter.
Banner in the works.
At EliteGK.com. Those are probably the best ways. Obviously, guys, if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, contact at InsideThe18Media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union Sports platform. If you haven't joined the Union Sports platform, I don't know where you guys have been. More content, join the free Union Sports soccer community right there. It is completely free. Engage, educate, entertain with like-minded individuals. We got to get Steven on there as well too to check it out. Shout out to all you guys who've been on there really presenting some really, really awesome work. Shout out to all the parents in there who've been engaging as well too. I know I've been getting the DMs from the parents as well too, who are really appreciating it. The more and more we can find a regulated, safe environment for people, Steven, you know, and this is not just a plug for the Union, but in general, to be open and honest and give feedback that's not, for lack of a better term, sensationalism. I find a lot of times on social media, people are trying to showcase how great they are as opposed to trying to find out what do people like about this? What do people not like about this? How they can improve this? You know, what's their honest opinion? And I think, you know, having a community of like-minded individuals is really the way to go about that. So any sort of forum or group or whatever, and we're just trying to do our best here with the Union, with that. Steven, do you have any camps coming up or any clinics coming up that you want to plug?
I'm doing something in October half term in the Northeast, which is full. So yeah. yeah, but I'm sure there'll be some things coming up in the future, and hopefully I've been working on it, trying to get out to the US and doing the rounds and doing a little bit of traveling and coaching elsewhere. So if anybody is interested, obviously feel free to get in touch, and I'd be happy to come out and do my own thing out there as well, you know.
Well, we have the convention coming up in Philadelphia. So the United Soccer Coaches Convention is coming up. I think it's the third week of January. If you want to go to that, guys, UnitedSoccerCoaches.org. I think the price goes up. Thank you for leading me into an ad read right there, Steven. I really appreciate that. That was awesome of you to be able to do that. So so lovely.
I'll be waiting for my commission.
guys, use promo code I18 for a discount for that. We're going to be at the convention. We'll be on Podcast Row in the exhibit hall. I don't know if you've been to a convention before, Steven, but they're pretty awesome. They're pretty awesome. So.
Brilliant. I can't say I've been in the US, but I have done down at St. George's Park.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That must be the next level.
Done a few down there. So yeah.
You presented, didn't you?
No. Okay. I didn't. No, I'm not. I'm not that held in that high esteem over here.
you're going to get that A license, and you know, as you keep progressing, and you know, with all these wonderful stories that we're getting, and all the wonderful people vouching for you, I'm sure they will be knocking on your door eventually. As we all know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and we're there for them. We're not there for us. So if we can bring value, that's all that matters. With that being said, guys, I have to start getting ready for a haircut because that's what's going on right now. We don't need any more of this. We need a haircut before our game. So that's all the time on Inside the 18. We will be back with Siski and Omar next week, and Nathan Thackeray from MC Courage. And we are out. Later, guys.